Mini-episode 1951 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 2026 FDH Lounge preview of the NFC South. We'll be talking about this for the upcoming season as a part of our 2026 NFL divisional previews. Rick Morris, Chris Galloway, your original FDH Lounge dignitaries, bringing it to you here today. And again, if you're looking to hear any big picture thoughts from us for the season, or thoughts about the off season or anything of that nature, we always fold that into the first one in the series that we do, which is the AFC East one. So go check that out if you're looking for any of that. The rest of these are built around largely the divisions at hand here. We will get into some things sometimes from some other divisions as we make points of comparison and whatnot. And the format for this, as it has been the last couple of years on the show, comes from Fantasy Football Draftology 2026, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. And when you go to the back of the guide, it is one run-on sentence for each NFL team. So for the NFC South, this is our predicted order of finish with the four teams and the one run-on sentence for each. Tampa Bay, notwithstanding the loss of franchise legend Mike Evans, the Bucs being a bit suspect in the trenches, and legitimate questions about what Baker Mayfield's attitude is going to be if he doesn't get the contract upgrade that he's seeking, there's no reason to believe that Tampa can't once again grab what will be the only playoff spot in football's weakest division. Carolina, Dave Canales and Bryce Young will really be on the spot after the team's surprising playoff appearance in 2026, such that they may not be back in 2027 if they don't at least get back that far, given organizational impatience, and the guess here is that it will go that way. Atlanta, it wouldn't be a Kevin Stefanski team without a zoo at quarterback, but the team should be in the mix in this execrable division if for no other reason than it's much better balanced than most of the squads that Stefanski had in Cleveland. New Orleans, against the expectations of most, Tyler Shough might actually be the quarterback that the Saints can now legitimately build around, and Jordan Tyson will certainly be a tasty treat for him in the vertical game, but the team has enough holes remaining that it's still a year away from serious contention, even in this dumpster of a division. And of course, since I wrote those words, Jordan Tyson has now become questionable for the first part of the season due to injury. And
of course he has, because that's all he was ever going to do.
Well, I was going to say, there's some cynicism about him based on his history at Arizona State, so we shall see. And the Saints have had guys over the years that haven't necessarily worked out to the level of their college pedigree. Hopefully Jordan Tyson won't be another one of those guys, but not off to a promising start in that regard. And that's the kind of thing that really hurts. There's really no margin for error, even in football's worst division. You kind of got to have everything going your way. You had everything going Carolina's way last year, just to limp into the playoffs, I believe, with a losing record. And again, they gave a good accounting of a shockingly good accounting of themselves in the wild card round, but I don't think it's indicative of the progress made. And that's the reason that I have them falling behind Tampa Bay again this year, Chris.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I mean, I think this is a shit division.
Yeah.
It's almost like no one should make the playoffs.
Yeah. Can we change the rules?
But I'm gonna differ from you a bit. I think the Baker Mayfield, you know, angry revenge tour, spiteful, you know, spoiled child act, falls short. Tampa Bay, I think, has an offensive coordinator problem, a head coach problem, a weakening defense problem, a lost Mike Evans problem, a lost Lavonte David problem, Jamel Dean problem. If you can tell, I don't really believe in this team. And so I'm actually going to take the Buccaneers to finish third in this division.
Wow.
I'm going to roll the dice, and I'm going to go with the Saints on the up because, A, they have a quarterback who's not young but started to show a bunch at the end of last year. They have a very weak schedule this year compared to others.
Yeah.
If Jordan Tyson can get on the field, he would be an asset. I've had my doubts since the draft. I was always scared to death that the Browns would take him. Because again, it's that upside of, you know, convincing yourself like, boy, if he stays healthy, he's the best wide receiver in this draft. Yeah. And guess what? That's probably true, except he's never going to be on the field. And so I was scared to death that the Browns would do a Brown and just move down from that pick like they did and then take Jordan Tyson and then try to do a tackle later. And as we all know, they did it right. They got Fano. They got the right guy. I don't know how much he can help the Saints this year. All that aside, I like the Saints at 9-8 to win the division.
Well, 9-8 will definitely do it.
Yeah, I think 9-8 is going to win the division. I think they go 9-8. I think they win the division.
No tiebreaker necessary.
Yeah. I think that the Panthers go 8-9 again, just like they did last year, and don't win the division, don't make the playoffs. I think the Buccaneers go 7-10. I think that the Baker Mayfield going to bet on myself and I'm a big little man act goes womp womp. Without Mike Evans, he's going to feel it. Now, he's got a great young wide receiver.
Egbuka, yeah.
Yep, to work with and that, but he's going to miss Mike Evans. And then I've got the Saints with the Falcons with a pretty good, it's like Cleveland South, right? How fitting that Stefanski's there. Mm-hmm. A pretty good roster.
Yeah, right? It is.
But a mess at quarterback.
Yeah.
And
you're better of Penix than anybody on the Browns roster, though. Let's be real.
Yes, I would 100%. I'd rather have 31 other quarterbacks. No, because I'd also take Jameis Winston right now. There's probably 35 quarterbacks I would take before the Browns quarterback room right now.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
I think the Falcons go 7-10, mm-hmm. and because of the quarterback mess, they're a lot like the Browns, what Stefanski just left. So there's a lot of talent on that roster, a lot of young talent on that roster. But without a quarterback, you ain't got nothing. And so I see the Falcons at 7-10. And again, you can look at that and go, well, that means they're only two games. They'll be in the division race until the end because there's only going to be a two-game gap between the top and the bottom. But it's going to be a division of absolute mediocrity. With only one team getting over 500 in the division. And I think that's going to be the Saints this year.
Very interesting. When I look at Atlanta, it's a little bit similar to, I talked about this with Indianapolis and the AFC, and that historically when I've looked at teams and I haven't exactly known what to make of them, that a lot of time, and I find this weird, disproportionately, they have a horrible season. I talked about that this happened, I think Tampa Bay, I think it was the end of the Raheem Morris era. I remember that I said during one of these previews with our guy Kyle Ross that I just couldn't get a handle on them, and then that turned out to be one of the worst years they had since they were an expansion team. That's not going to happen with Indianapolis because Shane Steichen gives you a floor. We've seen the last couple of years, there's not much of a floor with Kevin Stefanski. So I would expect 7-10. I would expect that ballpark to be the case with the Falcons. But I'm just saying, based on my history of, I can't really get my arms around the whole situation here. they may be a team that's a lot worse than anybody sees coming. That's just been a weird thing with me over the years.
6-11. I thought about 6-11, but then I looked at some of the talent in that roster. Yeah. And I know that Kevin Stefanski is going to dial up a run game for Bijan Robinson big time. And they've got a pretty good offensive line. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to err on the side of another win at 7-10. And Falcons fans, and not incorrectly so, will be able to say, we have some good talent. We were competitive, but we need a quarterback, right? I mean, that's what they're going to end the season with, that 11th pick in the draft or whatever they're going to end up with. And Falcons fans will be like, we got to pick another quarterback. And that's where they're going to come down and realize that that's what they've got to do.
I'll say this, though.
If you're a Falcons fan, you can look at your roster and say, we're not bereft of talent.
Right. But, like, the collapse scenario for Atlanta, here's the most obvious one. You've got a thing where – and this hurts me in my heart to say this because, man, I really rooted for Tua in Miami, and I was very, very happy during his highest of high times. But the combination of the hits that he's taken and whatever, like, he's completely done. And I'm on record as saying I want him to retire before he ends up with a drool cup. I don't want him to live the rest of his life that way. Tua's a complete non-factor. Penix isn't even back yet at this point. So as far as his capacity to hold up through the course of a season, I mean, Chris, the collapse scenario for them is like if they're like claiming Tommy Goomba off the practice squad of the Giants or some crap like that, that's the thing of like where they win only four games or whatever. Because they're having nobody.
Well, they have Cooper Rush, and I guess he's going to be the guy. I mean,
I don't know. Are you a believer in Cooper Rush? I'm not.
No, really. I'm not a believer in Cooper Rush, but I know he won a bunch of games for the Cowboys. So I know he can be serviceable enough, right? But to your point, that is the disaster scenario. And listen, that could result in the Falcons being like, you know, 4-13 and having a top three pick.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if Penix and Tua can't give them anything, that is a scenario where it gets worse. And so, I mean, right now I'm gonna, because of that run game, because of the talent, you know, Drake and others, I'm gonna go with 7-10, and that they get enough production out of that quarterback spot in the Stefanski system to win some games. You know, but God, right now, he should have been looking around hoping the Cardinals couldn't have cut a deal with Jacoby Brissett. He could have been reunited with him. Anybody, right? I mean, that's why. I say they feel like the Cleveland Browns South, right? They don't have a lot of depth, but they do have some talent and some young talent on that team that kind of excites you. But they don't have the quarterback position settled. And Atlanta's going to be drafting a quarterback next year, 100%.
And if they suffer enough quarterback injuries this year to where they're drafting very high, the thing that would be objectively hilarious is if they're drafting one spot above the Browns and they're able to hip check the Browns on who they really want. And a guy goes on to become a multiple-time Pro Bowler for Stefanski in Atlanta. That would be pretty funny.
Guess that based on the system that Monken runs and Stefanski runs, they're not going to be interested in the same guy.
Probably. Although, again, you presume that the Browns would be interested in drafting a quarterback who fits the quarterback system. Go back to Tim Couch and Chris Palmer. The Browns typically don't do this. The Browns just draft whoever and slot them in there. So, you know.
I have a little bit better of a feeling about what the Browns have been doing in the last couple drafts to think that maybe they won't do that.
As opposed to Carmen Policy and Shoebox Pete.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Or, you know, Johnny Manziel from A Homeless Guy or whatever. Yes. And I also think when you've got Matt Ryan in the front office there in Atlanta, he knows quarterback play.
Yeah.
And so from a Falcons standpoint, to put this back on the Falcons, I think they'll be drafting for a quarterback in 27, with a top 15 pick. And if I'm right and there's five quarterbacks in the first round, you know, they also might have to move up a little bit, depending on how low the floor is for them. But again, if you're a Falcons fan, there's talent on that roster, right? I think they're in a better position than Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay's defense has gotten soft. I think Tampa Bay has more needs. And I don't think Baker's a guy that you can go to the Super Bowl with. And so Tampa Bay has got themselves in the, you know, that sort of the Chinese finger trap that the Browns were in, right? Do you overpay a guy who's, I mean, since Baker left the Browns, he's 29 and 32.
Right.
He's a gamer. He's fun. Your fans love him. He has an occasional game where you go, look at that. That's that Heisman Trophy winner. And then you have a lot of like angst games. And then he's a wild card and you win one wild card game and then you're out of it. That's the Baker Mayfield ceiling and experience, right? And that's where now Tampa Bay is facing the same thing the Browns did, which is, do we extend this guy and give him $70 million a year that he wants? I mean, they offered him 55 and he said no.
That takes balls.
I mean, and if you're Tampa Bay, now you got to decide, are we going to give him 60? Like, and are we handcuffing our roster for Baker Mayfield?
Yeah, the cap ain't going up that much.
I mean, again, your ceiling with him is one, maybe getting to the divisional round. That's the Baker Mayfield experience.
I
think Tampa Bay is going to be faced with, do we not extend him? Do we go back out and try to find another quarterback?
Yep.
Like, they have a real – I think they're in a tougher spot than Atlanta because I think Atlanta has a tougher season, has a high pick, picks a young quarterback, and moves forward.
Yep.
With a cheap young quarterback in the draft. Tampa Bay's got a bigger challenge in how they're going to keep that roster together. And their challenge on talent will only get harder if they're paying Baker Mayfield $60 million.
Agreed. And here's what I would say. In the FDH Lounge, we are very fond of cross-sport comparisons and references, but even more fond of cross-anything references here. You and I are both political animals here, so here's what I'm going to compare this to. All this talk about Baker the last couple of years since he's had his success in Tampa, it reminds me of 1968. The new Nixon. There was only one Nixon, and there's only one Baker. There's no new Baker. We've been hearing about the new Baker. Oh, he's changed. He's matured. He's whatever. Okay, he's not dumb enough to shotgun beers at Jacobs Field anymore in front of, 40,000 people. I was there that night, and I'm not going to deny I was cheering. It was 2019, after all. It was when we were still on the Baker bandwagon. But, I mean, there's only one Baker.
It was real.
Yes, exactly. But, like, there was only one Nixon, and there's only one Baker. There's no new Baker, people. There's not. Sorry. There's just him, version 1.0. That's it, Chris.
I'm with you. We know who Baker is.
Yes.
And Tampa's going to have to decide whether a 500 quarterback who can get you one playoff win is good enough to sink that money into.
Yes.
Or do you cut bait like the Browns decided to? I don't know that the Browns' analysis at the time was wrong, right? Yeah. They gambled big on Watson, and it was an epic failure.
Yeah.
But I think the idea that Baker was not the guy to get you to the Super Bowl was not wrong. Now, they made the wrong choice in how they ended up going to another quarterback and who they picked and all the rest of that. You know, maybe they should have moved on from Baker, taken a veteran for 1 year and gone into the draft or whatever, you know, whatever you want to say. Right. But
yeah,
I don't think their analysis in moving off from Baker was incorrect.
I've always agreed with that. It was revisionism
They fumbled the second half of that badly, The first half in deciding to move on from Baker was actually the correct analysis.
Although the other thing is, too, If they had grown some balls and told him in 2021 when he was injured that he needed to be on the bench, I mean, part of that was him, and I've always blamed him and been bitter towards him that he was not smart enough to bench himself. But also, if the coaching staff and the organization isn't going to do it, then they bear responsibility as well, and their fingerprints are on the failure just as much as Baker's. So that was a thing where, typical Cleveland, nobody had clean hands in the situation. But yeah, I don't think Baker was the guy.
Let's bring it back to the NFC South, right?
Yeah.
At the time, you and I directly, I did especially, blamed Stefanski and saying, again, that was his lack of leadership. He sure didn't have control of the locker room. And you and I said at that time, had he benched Baker, played Keenum, they probably win two more games and make the playoffs.
Yes, yes. Right? And you got Baker's back-to-back playoffs.
Baker salvages his career with Cleveland probably.
Yeah.
And Kevin wins two more games and they make the playoffs. And maybe culture-wise.
Yeah.
Kevin failed at leadership. That's why that happened. He had to be a man and say, you're sitting. I don't care. I'm going with Keenum. You're broken, and we can't do this. And then we got to the last week of the season against Pittsburgh, and Kevin was running plays to physically hurt Baker because he hated him so much.
Yeah.
He was running plays to get Baker beat up. And no one can tell me Kevin wasn't doing that.
Well,
passive-aggressive nonsense. And guess what? That's what a beta male does. Rather than having sat him down 10 weeks earlier and salvaged the season, he pucked along with it, and that's where we ended up.
Now, in fairness to Stefanski, it's an old Cleveland tradition. Who can forget in 1993 Bill Belichick benching Bernie when he wouldn't run the bootlegs that he was calling for him, bootlegs for Bernie? So it's an old Cleveland tradition to sabotage your quarterbacks, okay? But that doesn't make it right in either instance. I'm not defending it. I certainly didn't defend it when it was happening to Bernie. And it is a situation where, you know, they always, one of the most sage pieces of advice that anybody can get in life is, If you stumble into a time machine and you go back in time, don't kill a butterfly or anything like that. That's where the butterfly effect comes from. Whatever. Have we stumbled on the butterfly effect in Cleveland with Stefanski not benching Baker in there and having Case Keenum come in? Is the entire history of things different? Because back-to-back playoff seasons for the Browns is unheard of. Like, is it as simple as that? That if you let Case Keenum get you into the playoffs.
The Browns weren't winning much. If they get into the, they'll get in the final wild card with Keenum because they win two more games. Maybe they win a wild card round with Keenum. That was it. That would have been the ceiling, right? They weren't winning anything, right?
Nobody's changing anything.
But the crime by Stefanski was the fact that you had a broken quarterback. And I understand if your backup, right, was a feeble rookie or some very weak alternative, I absolutely understand being like, well, we got to keep running Baker out there because he's our only option. Case Keenum has played a lot of football.
They paid him like $7 million. Yeah, they paid him a lot of money.
Case Keenum took the Vikings to the playoffs.
NFC Championship.
Kevin had a guy who could run his system efficiently.
Yeah.
And he didn't tell Baker, shut up and sit down.
Yeah.
I that will always, to me, and I get, listen, I also get, yeah, Baker should have taken himself out, but Baker was fighting for a contract. He wanted to prove himself. There is something to be said about he was just trying to gut it out with an injury. You know, he's a tough kid, man. I don't mean this whole segment to trash on Baker, you know, because I actually do like him. You know, he's a tough kid with a lot of moxie. And again, he was fighting for control of his locker room, too, with all that nonsense. And so I understand, to some degree, Baker's mentality. I blame Stefanski for all of that. And he should have been like, I'm in charge. You're hurt. We can do better with Keenum. You're not losing the job next year. Case isn't taking your job as a starter. But we got to try to win this year. That's where he was a loser of a head coach in that moment.
I've never understood the argument about Baker playing for a contract, Because what kind of a dumb shit is he, quite frankly? Because, like, you're up here. You're close to your peak value, like, right after you got hurt. Like, as soon as it becomes, like, your value is plummeting week by week by week by week by week, the longer you're in there. So it's like this notion that it was like that he was like going to turn it around and get a contract. It wasn't happening. Do you believe he's that dumb? I mean, it's possible. It's possible he's that dumb. But I mean, he shouldn't be allowed to drive a car if he's that dumb.
I don't know
is what
that
I'm
he's
saying.
Dumb. I think the problem with Baker is always his ego.
If you let your ego override your common sense and take tens of millions of dollars out of your pocket, then you're dumb. You're being a
I would have said to him, you take the 50, whatever million, the 50 to 55 million the Bucks are giving you right now.
Right.
Sign that contract.
That's true. Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
Yeah.
But the ego in him thinks he's a $70 million quarterback. And it's like, Baker, you're not. And you should take that 50 to 55 million dollars for 3 years and be like, thank you.
When it comes to
life-changing money for your family and your kids. Like, you just, what the hell's wrong with you? And you'd be the starting quarterback. You're it. You've got 3 year runway to prove you deserve another one, right? I mean, I think he's been dumb, and I think it's going to cost him money in this season.
You used the term life-changing right there. The thing that I think would be truly life-changing for this guy, I have no way of knowing if he's ever watched the Seinfeld episode where George starts to do the opposite of everything he's ever done. But, like, in terms of what he thinks he should do for his own career and for getting future contracts, if he watches that episode and decides to adopt the George Costanza philosophy of just doing everything the opposite, then he will be well paid. But if he stays on the current path and it's still good, and he's going to go down in history as one of the guys who pissed away more money than anybody else. He pissed away a lot of money in Cleveland, could have had a good long-term contract here. Looks like he's about to do the same thing in Tampa Bay. Out of desperation, they may give him what he wants, but that's not the sign of a well-run organization, quite frankly, if they do that.
Again, I'm questioning whether they're going to. I mean, I think if you're Tampa Bay right now, you put a really good offer on the table and he balked at it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're Tampa that you can justify going beyond what you've offered. You've already maxed out Baker at $55 million?
Right.
Really? Really?
But how'd he get there in the first place? We talked about this in previous segments with Minnesota and Pittsburgh, teams that are on the quarterback treadmill. You know, I don't see Tampa having a bad enough year to where they would be in position to draft pretty high. So it's like, if they're not going for Baker, does it become Kyler Murray if he hits the market or something like that? Like, there's just these teams where they're unwilling to, you know, tank for a year or trade a whole bunch of draft capital to move up and get a guy or whatever. Like, I don't see Tampa doing the thing that would make them say, oh, well, we have a much better plan of action. We're not going to do this. We're not going to give Baker the money. I think they should have a much better plan of action, but I don't see that happening.
I think they're going to have a new head coach next year. And I don't know that Baker will be there.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen with Tampa. They are facing some serious questions. And that's why I said I would rather be Atlanta right now than Tampa Bay.
I agree. Tampa Bay is sort of more yesterday's team in this division. But I think yesterday holds out long enough for them to be able to get the top spot this year in this division. You're saying New Orleans, and that would be a sign of Schuff being a guy who could, really kind of carry them to that level. And it wouldn't surprise me if he develops into that kind of quarterback. So any other thoughts on the 2026 NFC South Division, Chris?
It's going to be underwhelming and competitive in its underwhelmingness. But one of them is going to make the playoffs.
Yes. In other words, I think everything that we've said about them the last several years, more of the same for the 2026 NFC South. And as I predicted at the end of our 2026 NFC North discussion. Indeed, our discussion of the division far surpassed the caliber of play that you will see on the field this year. It'll be a much higher bar for us once we get into in our next segment, the NFC West. When we talk about that, one of football's very best divisions, something that would be hands down the best division in football were it not for whatever's going on with the 49ers right now and for the ongoing S show that continues to be the Arizona Cardinals. But we'll get into that in that segment that we do. Thank you so much, as always, Chris Galloway, and thank you, everybody, for checking out our 2026 NFC South discussion in the FDH Lounge.